The reading this morning, Jeff has asked me to read the 29th Psalm. Ascribe to the Lord, O mighty ones, ascribe to the Lord glory and strength. Ascribe to the Lord the glory due his name. Worship the Lord in splendor of his holiness. The voice of the Lord is over the waters. The God of glory thunders. The Lord thunders over the mighty waters. The voice of the Lord is powerful. The voice of the Lord is majestic. The voice of the Lord breaks the cedars. The Lord breaks in pieces the cedars of Lebanon. He makes Lebanon skip like a calf, Sirion like a young wild ox. The voice of the Lord strikes with flashes of lightning. The voice of the Lord shakes the desert. The Lord shakes the desert of Kadesh. The voice of the Lord twists the oaks and strips the forest bare. And in his temples all cry, Glory! The Lord sits enthroned over the flood. The Lord is enthroned as king forever. The Lord gives strength to his people. The Lord blesses his people with peace.
This morning we're going to talk about the voice of the Lord. I appreciate John reading this passage in Psalms, the 29th chapter. And I think some of you may be familiar with the song in the songbook, number 438, in your blue books, that has the same title and actually is inspired from that psalm. And actually, I learned that song, and then I realized that the psalm was there. I didn't realize that psalm was there. And the song is a very good song. And it brings out that idea of the power of God, the power of the voice of the Lord. And most of the time when we talk about power in the world, we're either talking about physical strength or we're talking about some kind of political or some kind of power like that that you might have over your subordinates at work or a political power or something like that. When we talk about the power of God, which we're going to look into this morning, we're talking about a power that he has that shows his effect on human beings, a power in a voice, a power in his presence, and it's not something that we would see necessarily in everyday life. And when I was thinking about this, I started thinking about a scene in Star Wars. I'm sure many of you have seen Star Wars. It's like 30 years old now. It's the original movie. And in that scene that I'm thinking of, Luke Skywalker's with Obi-Wan Kenobi, and they're pulling into the spaceport, Mos Eisley, I think, and they're looking for these droids, the stormtroopers, the bad guys. They're looking for these droids, and, you know, Obi-Wan has this power, the Force, you know, this power that he can make people do things, and by his voice, the guy, they pull up, and there's a checkpoint, and there's a stormtrooper on each side. And one stormtrooper says, you know, what are you doing here? And they had the droids in the back, robots in the back. And Obi-Wan, sort of under his breath, says, these aren't the droids you're looking for. And the one stormtrooper says to the other, these aren't the droids we're looking for. And then Obi-Wan says, move along now. And he says, you can move along now. He had the power of the voice there. And it showed that in the movie. And it's kind of silly, and I've heard people joke about that in times past. But there's an idea of power there, this idea of the Force that's brought out in that movie. Another thing that happened, didn't have with a voice, but a presence of someone. This is a rumor that I heard in high school, that there was a teacher there, and I don't remember what he taught. I think he might have had something to do with the sports program, but he was a teacher too. But he was a pretty good-sized guy and pretty well-built. And the rumor went around that he knocked a kid down by hitting him in the chest with one finger. Just pointing at him, hit him in the chest, he knocked him down. It was the idea, and everybody would talk about that, and you know how much power he had. That's the idea of power in a presence or the power of voice. Neither one of those things do I think really happened, but anyway, that's the kind of thing that you might hear, you might think about in the world around us when it comes to the power, the effect of a power of a presence or the effect of a power of someone's voice. As I said, we're going to look at this morning the presence of God and the effect of that presence on mankind. And we're going to use Psalms, the 29th chapter, as our outline for that. And it's an interesting chapter because I think really what it was David, from his position in history, looking back on what had happened before him to the Israelite people and understanding the power of God through the events that had happened to the Israelite people. We're going to look at several different things. We're going to first, we're going to look at everything, some of the things that are in there. We're also going to look at the idea of light. Light is sort of in there with the idea the voice of the Lord divides the flames of fire, but light is a very important aspect of God's presence here on earth as well. First thing we can look at there is it says in Psalms 29, the voice of the Lord is over the waters. You know, that's taken from Genesis, the first chapter, and the second verse. The earth was without form and void, and darkness was on the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. Spirit of God hovered over the face of the waters. Before the world was created, the Spirit of God was there hovering over the face of the waters from the beginning of time, and it shows that God is eternal, that there's not a beginning to God, and there's not an end. He was there when there was nothing, when all it was waters, whatever that form that took, God was there, and His presence was there. In Ezekiel, we're not going to look at that one this morning, but there's a reference to the sound of many waters, the sound of God making the noise of many waters. So water is, and the sound of water is sometimes associated with the presence of God. It also said that the God of glory thunders. In Psalm 29, it says the God of glory thunders. Now this is something that we can readily see, and we're going to look in Exodus, the 20th chapter, to understand that. And this, what we're going to look at, has to do with when the children of Israel left Egypt. They, first of all, wandered a little bit in the wilderness after they left Egypt and crossed the Red Sea, and Moses was their leader. And I think it was about 3 months' time, they came to the foot of Mount Sinai. And if you remember the story, you remember that that's where Moses had most likely been when he saw the burning bush and God told him to go free the people from Egypt. So Moses had returned to his place where he'd first received the information from God. And the children of Israel camped there at the base of this mountain, the mountain of God, Mount Sinai as we call it today. And they were waiting there. And in Exodus, the 20th chapter, I'm going to read a few verses here in 18 through 21. Now all the people witnessed the thunderings, the lightning flashes, the sound of the trumpet, and the mountain smoking. And when the people saw it, they trembled and stood afar off. Then they said to Moses, You speak with us, and we will hear. But let not God speak with us, lest we die. And Moses said to the people, do not fear, for God has come to test you, and that His fear may be before you, so that you may not sin. So the people stood afar off, but Moses drew near the thick darkness where God was. Moses went to the, they were there at the base of the mountain. And it says that the mountain, there was thunder and lightning, the sound of a trumpet, and there was smoke, and it talks about darkness. And you know, what's not so amazing is that the people were frightened by that. The people were afraid because the presence of God was there and it was making an enormous racket and it was doing things that were not natural with the smoke and the darkness and all that was not natural, wasn't normal. They recognized that was not normal and they were fearful. What amazes me, the more I think about it, is that Moses went into that. All that racket and that supernatural stuff, Moses walked into it. That's the amazing thing to me. Not that the people were frightened by it, because this seems to make perfect sense. How many of us, you know, we don't live in an area where there's a lot of thunder, but if you ever were in a place where there was a lot of thunder, you realize, especially as a child, you realize how frightening and disorienting that can be. And this was not just thunder. This was everything mixed together. So it was a tremendous racket, a lot of thunder. If we go over to Job... Job also talks about the idea of a racket or a thundering when he talks about the presence of God. In Job, the 37th chapter, actually this isn't Job speaking, this is Elihu at the end, one of Job's friends who's trying to bring some sense to the conversation. In chapter 37, verses 2 through 5, hear attentively the thunder of his voice and the rumbling that comes from his mouth. He sends it forth under the whole heaven. His lightning to the ends of the earth. After it, a voice roars. He thunders with his majestic voice, and he does not restrain them when his voice is heard. God thunders marvelously with his voice. He does great things which we cannot comprehend. all this idea that God's voice thunders. It makes a noise that is not earthly. That's hard for a human to comprehend. So God's voice thunders. Then here back in the 29th Psalm, it says, I'm going to sing the song for you, but the song says, the voice of the Lord breaks the cedars of Lebanon. He makes them skip like a calf. Now, first of all, we have to understand what a cedar of Lebanon is. And, you know, that's pretty easy, the church building at Laverne. And I know many of you probably haven't been to that church building. The church building at Laverne is on a residential street with a lot of what are called deodar cedars, which are cedars from Asia that grow to 80, 90 feet tall. There's 50 or something on the road, and there's plenty of them. They're 90 feet tall. That type of tree is somewhat of a relation to a cedar of Lebanon, so it kind of looks like that. These are massive trees. They get this big around here. They make it bigger up in the mountain somewhere. And it says that the voice, not the power, but the voice of the Lord can break a cedar of Lebanon. It can destroy a cedar of Lebanon, the voice of the Lord. And more potently, it says it makes them skip like a calf. Makes a tree or an area where trees grow skip like a calf. Now, I don't know if that has a reference to earthquake, and I can't tell you that I've ever seen a calf skip, but I can kind of imagine what that would look like. It's hard to imagine a tree skipping like that, isn't it? But the voice of the Lord has the power to do that. God's voice alone has the power to make a tree skip. And it talks about the breaking of the trees. Now, this is one part in here in Psalms that I don't have any reference to go back and say, this happened at such and such a time. Now, the idea of the earthquake, there was earthquakes, the ground shook when they were with Moses, and that's also referenced, I think, there in Job that we just looked at, the idea of the ground shaking. But we can go to 1 Kings and get a little bit of a picture about the power of God there. In 1 Kings, the 19th chapter, we have a different story that's going on here. We have a story of Elijah the prophet. Elijah the prophet had a very difficult task. He lived at a time when the children of Israel weren't righteous. They weren't following God. The king, the queen, Ahab and Jezebel, they were fighting against the righteous people. They were trying to kill the righteous people. And a matter of fact, they were trying to kill Elijah at the time. This is right after the story, maybe the greatest victory story of all time for Elijah, where he had called for the fire to come down from heaven, and it had lit the altar, and he'd killed the 400 prophets of Baal. Because he had done that, Jezebel was angry and was trying to kill him. So Elijah was feeling bad. So he left, and he went probably to Sinai somewhere, maybe not the same mountain, but he's down there a long ways away from home, and he's feeling bad. I'm going to read 1 Kings 19, 9 through 12. And there he went into a cave and spent the night in that place. And behold, the word of the Lord came to him and said to him, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" So he said, "I have been very zealous for the Lord God of hosts, for the children of Israel have forsaken your covenant, torn down your altars, and killed your prophets with the sword. I alone am left, and they seek to take my life." Then God said, "Go out and stand on the mountain before the Lord." And behold, the Lord passed by, and a great and strong wind tore into the mountains and broke the rocks in pieces before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake. But the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire. But the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, a still small voice. That's an interesting passage to think about, especially when we're feeling down like Elijah was at this time. But the idea I'd like to focus on here is the idea of the power that God had. And it's interesting here, it says, God, it doesn't say this, but I'll this is my version of what happened. God made these things happen. He made the wind, he made the earthquake happen, but God wasn't in those things. I don't have an explanation for that. The point that I want to make here this morning is that he created a wind that was so strong and powerful that it broke rocks. Now, I know a lot of us have been in winds. We live in Southern California. We get some pretty good winds. And those trees I was talking about, some of you know that there was a couple of those giant trees in front of the church building at Laverne that got blown over about 10 years ago or so. And it was a mess. The wind blew them over. And the wind is a very powerful thing. But this wind could break rocks. So it could make a tree skip like a cow, I guess, or a calf, and it could break a tree and splinter a tree. God has that power to create those that kind of wind of issue. It also says the voice of the Lord shakes the wilderness. We've kind of talked about that, the idea of the power of God making the ground shake, making the earth move. We just looked at that in 1 Kings where Elijah was there and God sent an earthquake. We also referenced back to the children of Israel back when they were wandering in the wilderness and the idea that God has the power to create an earthquake. So those are the things that I see in Psalms that give us the idea of God's power. Voice over the water, thundering voice, breaks the cedars, and shakes the wilderness. I'd like to look a little bit about light, too. Because light is a very important aspect of the presence of God. And I think the more you look at that, the more you realize its importance. It says that God dwells in unapproachable light. Unapproachable light. I think that's in 1 Timothy it says that. In light that you can't approach. And I know a lot of us have seen pretty bright lights in our lives, but this is unapproachable light. Light that you can't even get close to. Closest thing we can probably associate with that is the sun. But light that you can't come close to. If you remember, the children of Israel were wandering in the wilderness. There was two things that led them. In the day, it was a pillar of cloud, and at nighttime, it was light, wasn't it? It was a pillar of fire that led them to go different places. In Ezekiel, the first chapter, 26 through the 28th verses, Ezekiel speaking here says, "And above the firmament, over their heads, was the likeness of a throne, in appearance like a sapphire stone." And this is Ezekiel seeing a vision of God in his splendor. "On the likeness of the throne was a likeness with the appearance of a man high above it. Also from the appearance of his waist and upward I saw, as it were, the color of amber, with the appearance of fire all around within it. And from the appearance of his waist and downward I saw, as it were, the appearance of fire with brightness all around it. Like the appearance of a rainbow in a cloud on a rainy day, so was the appearance of brightness all around it. This was the appearance of the likeness of the glory of the Lord. So when I saw it, I fell on my face, and I heard a voice of one speaking." In his vision, Ezekiel's vision saw God's presence, and what did he see? Something like fire, something like amber fire with a rainbow, appearance of a rainbow all around it. And a rainbow is an interesting thing because it combines the idea of light with the idea of water, doesn't it? You've got to have both to have a rainbow in the world today. But God's presence was like a rainbow, was like light. So God's presence has the idea of light associated with it. These are aspects about the voice or the presence of God. Now, I'd like to go into a sort of a second set of verses that have to do with that physical. This is a physical presence of the physical manifestation of God to a human being. Now, what's the effect of that physical manifestation of God to the human being, to the living human? And we have a lot of examples of that, mostly in the Old Testament, but some in the New Testament as well. In Exodus, the 19th chapter, just right before the verses that I read before about Moses going up to the mountain when all the smoke and the lightning was going on, it says, "Now Mount Sinai was completely in smoke because the Lord descended upon it in fire. Its smoke ascended like the smoke of a furnace, and the whole mountain quaked greatly. And when the blast of the trumpet sounded long and became louder and louder, Moses spoke, and God answered him by voice. Then the Lord came down upon Mount Sinai on the top of the mountain, and the Lord called Moses to the top of the mountain, and Moses went up. And the Lord said to Moses, 'Go down and warn the people, lest they break through to gaze at the Lord, and many of them perish.'" This is an idea that God had set a boundary And only Moses was supposed to approach him, and nobody else was supposed to. And what was going to happen if they did? They were going to die. This wasn't... Now, the other verse, it's interesting how the comparison is. The other verses we read, the people were worried, weren't they? Well, you go, Moses. We don't want anything to do with it. We're afraid. And fear is one thing, isn't it? We can be afraid of a lot of things. Some people are afraid of silly things. But that doesn't mean they're dangerous. I might be afraid of cats. That doesn't mean a cat's going to kill me, does it? Maybe it will if I'm allergic to it or something. But that just because I'm afraid of something doesn't mean that it's dangerous to me. But this isn't somebody being afraid of something, is it? This is God saying, if they come through, they're going to perish. They're going to die. God realizing that his presence would cause the death of these people. In Exodus, the 33rd chapter, a little bit later, we have a relationship that's being formed between God and Moses. And Moses, getting closer to God, wants to get to know him better and get to understand him better. And Moses said, "Please show me your glory," to God. Then God said, "I will make my goodness pass before you, and I will proclaim the name of the Lord before you. I will be gracious to whom I will be gracious, and I will have compassion on whom I will have compassion." But God said, "You cannot see my face, for no man shall see me and live." Then he tells him to stay in that rock place. He's going to put his hand over the rock and cover him and protect him from his presence. No one can see his face and live. No one sees God and lives. The conclusion I gather from that is the human body was not built to deal with the presence of God. I mean, this was Moses. And Moses was, if we had an example to hold up high to say, this man has lived a very righteous life, not a completely righteous life, but a very righteous life, Moses might be the one we all might lift up and agree. But even Moses, because even in his righteousness, he was not able to do this. God said, you can't do it. So he only saw the backside as he passed by, and God protected him from his complete presence. In that same story, if we go into the next chapter, remember Moses, when this is all happening, Moses is up on the mountain. Moses comes down from the mountain. "Now it was so, when Moses came down from Mount Sinai, and the two tablets of the Testament were in Moses' hand when he came down from the mountain, that Moses did not know that the skin of his face shone while he talked with him. So when Aaron and all the children of Israel saw Moses, behold, the skin of his face shone, and they were afraid to come near him." Moses was in the presence of God, and what happened to him? He changed. God is in unapproachable light. So what happened to Moses when he was in his presence? His face shone. The light affected him. The unapproachable light affected Moses' physical presence. He didn't even know it. That's kind of an interesting thing, too. He didn't even realize it was going on. But Aaron saw it, and the rest of them saw it, and they were afraid of him. Because, and it's interesting to kind of puzzle about what that must have been, what was different about him, that his face shone. But it did, and it was clear, and it was something that couldn't be hidden. The presence of God physically changed Moses. And I don't think he did for all time. I don't really have an answer how long he was like this. Maybe he was till he died. I don't know. At the end, he covered his face with a veil so that people wouldn't be frightened of him. But it physically changed him. Now let's go over to the New Testament. We're going to look in Matthew, the 17th chapter. And in Matthew, the 17th chapter, we have a story of the Mount of Transfiguration. A very interesting story there, too, where you have Jesus taking Peter, James, and John, three of his apostles, up to the top of a mountain. And then they change, they transfigure. And that's sort of what happened to Moses, isn't it? At the time, he was transfigured to some extent at that time. But here, 1,000 years after Moses and Elijah have both died, they appear with Jesus, talking with Jesus on this mountain. And Peter says, you know, let's build three tabernacles, one for each, one for Elijah, one for Moses, one for Jesus. While Peter was still speaking, behold, a bright cloud overshadowed them. There's that bright, the presence of God in light. And suddenly a voice came out of the cloud saying, "This is my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased. Hear him. And when the disciples heard it, they fell on their faces and were greatly afraid. Here we have the three apostles who had witnessed a bunch of stuff that Jesus had done, miraculous things that Jesus had done. Now they're witnessing Elijah and Moses there speaking with Jesus in a transfigured and altered state, and they hear a voice, and what do? They fall down. They couldn't stand up. It doesn't say they bowed down, does it? Now, I'd like to make sure we have a distinction between those two things. Bowing down is one thing, and we bow down to God when we ask for something from Him, when we praise Him. We do that on our own accord. It doesn't say they did this on their own accord. They fell on their faces. They did this because they had to. They had no choice. The voice of God made them fall down on their faces because of His power and His presence. In Acts, the 26th chapter, in that chapter we have an account of the conversion of Saul, who became Paul. There's three accounts of that in Acts. There's the first time when it's told, then there's two times later on when Paul tells somebody else about what happened. And I chose this one because it makes a point here. And if you remember, Paul was traveling, or Saul at the time, was traveling to Damascus, and he had letters, and he was able to go bind Christians, people who called themselves believers of Jesus, and bring them back to Jerusalem for punishment. And he's on his way there. And he's telling this story. And while thus occupied, as I journeyed to Damascus with authority and commission from the chief priests, at midday, O king, along the road, I saw a light from heaven, brighter than the sun, shining around me and those who journeyed with me. And when we had all fallen to the ground, I heard a voice speaking to me and saying in the Hebrew language, Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me? It is hard for you to kick against the goads. He's journeying along with a group, isn't he? And it's daytime. It's the middle of the day. It's not so different than the light outside. Again, think about that light, an unapproachable light. In the middle of the day, that there can be a light bright enough that it even gets your attention. But more so than it got their attention, what happened to them? We had all fallen down. They all fell down. They didn't bow down out of reverence. They didn't bow down out of reverence. They fell down. They had to fall down. The power of God was there, and they recognized. They didn't all recognize. I don't think it was from God. I'm not even sure Paul did at the time. He did in hindsight. Maybe some of the others did in hindsight. I don't really know what happened to the rest of that group. But they saw the presence of God, and they knew they had no choice because of that presence to fall down on the ground. In Ezekiel, remember we read the story in Ezekiel, and Ezekiel saw the vision, and he fell on his face. He saw a vision of God, and he fell on his face. Sometimes I think we talk about the fact that people will bow down to God at the end of time. If you read these verses, you're not going to have a choice. The presence of God is going to knock you down. It's going to put you at His feet. There won't be any choice. There wasn't a choice, and that's why I wanted to read these three scriptures, because these people didn't have a choice. They weren't choosing to bow down before God. They had to bow down before God because His presence was so magnificent, was so awesome, that they had to bow down. This morning, Brandon led a song, Be Still and Know That I Am God. And that's an important thing to recognize, and that's why I think it's important to look at the power of God in this way. Because we need to be still and to recognize the power of God. We don't see the power of God manifested so much in the world around us today unless we really think hard about it. It doesn't jump out. We don't have a bright light hitting us at noontime. We don't have trees being knocked down by the voice of God. God isn't speaking to Jesus on top of a mountain today that are obvious to us. And actually, most people through time, they didn't witness those things either. We have to understand, we need to be still and know and consider the things the presence of God. The presence of God brings death, physically changes people, and causes people to fall down. People like you and me. That's one thing that I think about when I think of these things. You know, it's history, and these people lived a long time ago, and sure, they didn't speak the same language, they didn't look the same, they didn't wear their hair the same, we would have probably thought they were weird. They would have thought we were weird. But they were people like you and me. And these things happened to them. They really happened to them. There was really a guy that was walking from Jerusalem to Damascus who saw a bright light on the road and got knocked down on his face because of that light. It really happened. Our God is an awesome God. Another song that Brandon led this morning. God is an awesome God. And that word maybe is a little bit overused. I don't think it's necessarily a bad word to use, but maybe a little overused in the relevance of what it means about God. Awesome, inspiring awe, so that we can't even understand or comprehend exactly the power and the majesty that He has. Hopefully this morning we've considered what the presence of God did to human beings. Presence of God, what it did to Moses, what it did to Peter, James, and John, what it did to Paul on the road to Damascus. Physically changed them. Consider the power that God commands. And we talk about the fact that God created the world, and He did it by His voice. We know that when we read the first chapter of Genesis, that God spoke and it was so. But sometimes I think we forget how much power He still has. And Psalms 29th chapter is a good one to remind us of that power. David at the Lord's Supper talked about the fact that Jesus was equal to God, but He made Himself of no reputation and came in the form of a man to live on the earth as a son of man, came from being God to being the son of man. And Jesus had power when He was on earth as well. Jesus, the demons, we were studying Mark back at La Verne on Sunday mornings, and there's several, in the first few chapters, several references to demons recognizing Jesus and being afraid of Him, calling Him by name when nobody else knew who He was, but the demons knew who He was. They called Him by name and they feared Him. Jesus calmed the sea. He had power over the elements to calm the sea. He caused the dead to rise. He raised people from the dead, and indeed, He Himself was raised from the dead. God is powerful, and His presence caused fear, and yet He reaches out to us as a father to a child. And I think it's important that we understand and have some fear and reverence for what God's power is. I don't think God would have wanted us to know all those stories of the things that happened in the Old Testament, and even some in the New, if He didn't want us to understand the power that He commands. The power of His presence, the power of His voice. But He reaches out to us now, doesn't He? He gave us His Son to be our brother, and He our Father. So He reaches out to us as a Father now. And we need that protection that He offers. Just as He covered Moses' body and presence with His hand and protected him, we need the protection of God as well. I'll leave these thoughts with you this morning. Hopefully that you've gotten something out of the idea of the voice of the Lord and the power and the majesty of God. We'll offer the invitation. If there's anyone that's subject to the call, or if there's anything else that needs to be brought before the congregation, we'll invite you to come forward as we stand and sing the closing song.